Cam.
G'day, Richard Giles. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, yeah. I've been better. Been better. Yes. It's Monday the 24th of April, 2006, and I fractured my toe last night, as you know, in the middle of the night. About 11... Here's the story, ladies and gentlemen. About 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. last night, I'm sitting on the can, on the dunny, on the loo.
As you do.
On the WC, I was reading a book, as I like to do. It was late at night. Let me just adjust this windsock thing here. Yeah, and all of a sudden, I hear this smashing sound. Well, it sounds like it's coming above my head. It sounds like a plane was crashing through the ceiling above me. I leapt, ninja style, with my pants around my ankles. Fortunately, I'd only been doing number ones and not number twos. Leapt off the... Because, yes, I sit down to do number ones, ladies and gentlemen. I was thinking about doing number twos. Wasn't quite sure. Thought, you know, play it safe. Leapt forwards, snagging the little toe of my left foot on the door jamb, bending it backwards and fracturing it.
Bugger.
Turns out the sound was made by a shaving mirror that I'd stuck to the wall of my shower a day or two earlier, falling down and smashing on the bottom of the shower, which is next door to the toilet in the same room. You know, it's a combo thing. And the sound obviously ricocheting off the ceiling above me. So, yeah, spent the night in slight agony and went to see a doctor this morning. She goes, looks at it and grabs the tip of my little toe and starts pulling on it and pulling and pulling and pulling. Now, note I said my little toe she was pulling on here, nothing else.
I was just glad she didn't grab forceps and wiggle your eyeball around.
I've had a couple of weeks of that shit, haven't I? And then she says to me after she does this, yeah, it was bent funny. I thought I should straighten it out. I said, yeah, thanks, honey. She said, that's definitely broken. So I went and got an x-ray done here. So I fractured my little toe on my left foot. So I've got a cane. I've got a walking stick.
Yeah.
Which is the upside in all this. So I've always wanted a walking stick. So I went to the chemist on the way home and I walked in and I'm testing out the walking sticks. And I said to the lady, the sales assistant, you know, I said, hey, shh, come here. I said, where do you keep the ones with the knives that come out the bottom? She said, what? We don't have any with knives. I said, don't worry, the ones with the silencer, you know, that shoots sleeping darts. Where do you keep them? Are they at the back? And
she didn't get it?
No, she didn't get it. Apparently there must be a special order thing. There must be a website. ThinkGeek or somewhere like that probably has those ones.
Probably. So the deal, right, with... broken toes and that, and even feet, I think, stuff like that. It's basically you just got to wait until it fixes itself, right? It's not like they can set it in a cast or anything.
No, nothing like that. So I've put a bit of elastoplast around the toe, sort of giving it a bit of support, holding a position, and that's me for 6 weeks. Stay off the foot, she said. I said, but I'm supposed to be flying to New York this week to go to the Tribeca Film Festival. She said, no, you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be spending 36 hours in a plane and then hobbling around New York with a broken toe.
Bugger that, I'm going.
I didn't, no. It turns out I've got stuff to do. Got TPN stuff to do this week that I need to be here for anyway, so it was just one of those things. One of those things, mate. But there you go. That's the beginning of my week.
Sounds like it's going to be an exciting one for you.
Yeah. What about you, mate? You got anything good to start off the week with?
No, nothing particularly amazing has sort of happened to me over the weekend or anything like that. Just an ordinary week for me.
All right. Well, let's get into the news. There's no news. That's the news. Cam broke his toe. That's the only news. I did, actually, one thing I didn't talk to you about on Friday, but I did insert into the beginning of the show, didn't I? Did you listen to the Friday show at all?
I caught the beginning, yeah.
You heard Tycho from New York's message?
I did, yeah.
I only remembered that as I was editing the show, that Tycho had left that on audio, so Tycho crashed his car in New York City while listening to us. I love it.
I want to know what caused the accident. Like, was there a particular moment that we were talking to the... Because basically he was listening to the show we did with our expert at Queensland to do with the Judas Gospel. And I'd like to know if there was a particular point that was so good that made him slam his car into something, or whether or not it was just because he was completely distracted.
Sorry, Matt, I just opened blog lines while you were saying all that, and your voice just went all warpy again. I've got to get that fixed. I might uninstall Skype and reinstall Skype, see if I can fix that.
Stop opening stuff when I talk.
Well, I've got to open it sometime, man. I can't do it when I talk, because I can't open websites and, talk at the same time. Tycho, let us know what you were doing, mate. What part of the show it was that freaked you out so much that you had an accident, and let us know if everything's okay. I sort of read through the news this morning while I was lying in bed with my foot propped up, and there was nothing really exciting going on in the world of the web. Oh, I tell you one thing I do. I was thinking over the weekend, this should be the week about Anzac Day. So for those of you who aren't Aussies, tomorrow, Tuesday, the 25th of April, the 25th of April in Australia. Is it the same in New Zealand or just Australia? Do you know?
Well, I'm guessing it. I mean, they must have something in New Zealand. I'll look it up while we're talking.
Yeah, if there's any Kiwis listening, let us know. Is Anzac Day. Now, Anzac Day is the day that we remember... we remember the invasion of Turkey by the British and the Commonwealth countries and the other allies of the British back in 1914, 1915, when was it? 1914, I think. And I saw a great documentary on telly on the weekend. I think it was Saturday night on the ABC, maybe, about Gallipoli. Do you happen to catch that?
No, I didn't, and it is in New Zealand, by the way.
It is, okay. Shout out to all of our Kiwi friends. So there's this great documentary on the ABC about Gallipoli, and, you know, I knew a little bit, but it's something that I've never really studied. I didn't really care about history when I was a kid at school. And this was fascinating, and just, I mean, I knew it was a debacle, but the size of the frack-up, the whole Gallipoli thing was, which is absolutely fascinating. This documentary had a lot of footage from back then. There's only a little bit of footage, live footage of Gallipoli, which this guy had because there was some journalist who was over there. But there's some photos and all that kind of stuff of the 9 months or whatever it was that they were buried in the trenches on the shores of Turkey. But it's just disgusting. And I was saying a bit to Father Bob last week, I don't really get the whole Anzac Day thing, why we commemorate or even celebrate this. It should be a day of marching in the streets talking about what a bunch of fracking idiots the British are and how we should wipe them off the face of the earth for sending us there in the first place. What a bloody disaster. So anyway.
It's the same with them all, though, right? I mean, usually.
The wars.
Yeah, I guess. Know. It's not good for anyone.
The frack up in Iraq at the moment. But do you know much about the background of Gallipoli and why we were there in the first place?
No, to be honest.
All right. Well, here's the CAMS, you know, Gallipoli for Dummies version. Oh, that's a bit of news. The guy who actually, you know, ran the Dummies company and the publishing company and then has been running Ask.com, Steve Berkowitz. Berkowitz, is that who he is, or is he a serial killer? I think it's Steve Berkowitz. He's just gone over to Microsoft. He's going to be running MSN. Berkowitz, really? Yeah. That was big news on Friday. Yeah, he's been the CEO of Ask.com, the company that owns Ask Jeeves, and was bought by IAC, one of those late last year. He's now gone over to run MSN.com. There's a good story as part of that. I know I was talking about Gallipoli. I'll get back to Gallipoli in a sec. But I read somewhere on the weekend, you know, all the sort of repositioning Microsoft's tried to do of MSN Search over the last 12 months and all the money they've been sinking into it, et cetera, et cetera. Apparently their share of the search market in the US actually dropped in the last 12 months.
Really?
With all of that investment, it dropped still. They've got some big challenges. Anyway, so here's the background in Gallipoli. So there was this war basically shaping up. You had, on one side, you had Germany and Austria, the Kaiser Wilhelm, and on the other side, you had the Brits, the French, and the Russians. They were all sort of in, you know, one allied camp versus the Germans and the Austrians in another allied camp. God knows what they were fighting about. You had the Ottoman Empire, basically Turkey, that was sort of, hadn't taken sides yet, and they were all trying to get Turkey to come over. They were all courting Turkey to come over, right? The Ottoman Empire, which had been an empire for over 600 years. It had been around longer than the British. It was Muslim and had a lot of problems, was fairly corrupt, as most empires are. They've been around that long. And now Turkey had, through public subscription, they'd raised money to get a couple of battleships built in England. And these battleships were nearing completion. And the head of the Admiralty in Britain, it was a fellow by the name of Lord Winston Churchill at the time, who was about 42, he decided, yeah, you know what, we don't want to give those boats to Turkey. I think we're going to need them to fight Germany, so we're just going to keep them. And we're going to keep the money. So, yeah, that's not going to insult the Turks much. So the Turks went, screw you, you bastards. And Germany went, oh, here's an opportunity. They said, oh, don't worry, Turkey, we'll give you a couple of our battleships to make up for it. So the Turks obviously decided, well, the Brits are a bunch of a-holes, so we're going to go and join forces with the Germans. So then Churchill, ye old Churchill, had his next bright idea. How this guy ever survived, I don't know. His next bright idea was, oh, well, we've got to get Turkey out of the way, so let's go and attack Istanbul, the capital of Turkey. We'll go in there, quick campaign, as they always are, you know, these wars against countries. Yeah, quick, we'll be in and out, like in Baghdad. Yeah, in and out. Like a bit of the old in and out.
I was going to say, it sounds like your foot problem this morning.
I wish. So they're going to send these boats. The Navy's going to go in, and to get to Istanbul, they have to go to this very narrow strait where the Aegean Sea, this is kind of where, you know, the Battle of Troy was, where the Aegean Sea turns into the Sea of Maman, which is kind of an inland sea. There's this very narrow strait where you can see from one side to the other side. The ships needed to pass through that, and Istanbul sits in the Sea of Maman. It's like, you know, this port in this inland sea. Very hard to get through this narrow strait. So the Turks obviously knew the Brits were coming. So they had cannons up either side of this narrow strait defending it, these castles and ports defending the strait. But they also laid all these mines out in the water. And so the British fleet of battleships got there, and they see the mines, and they go, oh, mines, okay, mines, right. So they sent some tugboats out to get rid of the mines. But, of course, the Turks just blew the crap out of the tugboats with their cannons, so that didn't work. And the Brits go, ugh, cannons, we hadn't thought of that. They've only been around 1,000 years. We didn't see that one coming. So they sent in some other ships that were going to take out the mines. But before they sent in these other ships, the Turks went and laid a new set of mines further back than where the mines were originally. The British hadn't thought about that. All of a sudden, their ships started blowing up. And they're going, oh, they're getting good with them cannons, aren't they? And by the time they'd lost about 6 ships, they figured out, oh, they've put new mines down, you sneaky, sneaky bastards. So then they had this bright idea, well, obviously we can't get our ships into Istanbul until we take out these two forts. So what we'll do is we'll land all of these troops on the on sort of Gallipoli Point, and we'll send all these troops in, and they'll take out the forts. And they thought, what we'll do is we'll send in those idiot dummies from Australia and New Zealand, which somebody ended up deciding to call the ANZACs, the Australian-New Zealand Army Corps. We'll send them in as a bit of a decoy up on Zed Beach, which was right round the cove, Anzac Cove as it's now known, while all the good high-class British troops... Have a cup of tea, exactly. And they were all given the rules. So anyway, the Aussies, you know, and the New Zealanders land bright and early one morning on this beach. Too far. They were about 1,000 yards up the beach from where they were supposed to land. They were supposed to land on this piece of beach, nice sort of steady incline. You can run up the beach. Where they actually landed was at the foot of a cliff. And there's about 200 Turks at the top of this cliff with machine guns and sniper rifles, defending it against thousands of Anzacs that turn up. But, you know, the Turks are just at the top of this cliff, just picking them off like ducks in a shooting gallery, mate. And so the Aussies and the New Zealanders just got wiped out. But, you know, the Brits, being Brits, go, oh, well, they're just Aussies and New Zealanders. Who cares? We'll just send another lot in. Just kept sending them in. And they just kept getting wiped out. And meanwhile, the Brits, who were landing up the beach a bit, they had orders to meet up with the Kiwis and the Aussies. But of course, the Aussies, and there was about 16,000 British on the beach up the street. But because the Aussies and the Kiwis didn't turn up, they said, oh, well, we'll just sit here. You know, our orders are...
Having a cup of tea.
Yeah, our orders are to wait until they arrive. So it's like that old Monty Python sketch, right? All right, I won't leave here until somebody says they've come from you. My orders are not to let anyone in the room unless they say they're with you. So they're just sitting there, and anyway, so then it turns into this whole trench warfare thing that goes on for 9 months. Something like 395,000 guys get killed on all sides, and it ends with the British and the people under the British command basically running away in the middle of the night 9 months later. 400,000 people dead. What did they achieve? Nothing. Nothing. Not a sausage. Nothing was achieved because of bad planning.
Oh, no, plenty was achieved. A whole heap of people died.
Yeah.
Hey, so I just had a look at Wikipedia, and there's this interesting sentence. A full 10% of the New Zealand population, because back then there was just under 1 million, served overseas during World War One, and New Zealand had the highest casualty and death rate per capita of any country involved in the war. Australia had the highest casualty rate of any military involved in the war. That doesn't make any sense, does it? They obviously weren't military then or something, but interesting stuff, eh? I mean...
No, New Zealand had the biggest death rate per capita. More people out of the entire population of New Zealand were killed. More people per capita of the military, I would say, of Australia got killed. I don't know. Anyway... Yeah, so we got screwed over by the Brits, not for the first nor the last time, and completely wiped out. Completely, just totally wiped out. What a fracking disaster. So, you know, I don't think we should, you know, and then the interesting thing about this documentary was they actually had photos and letters from some of the guys from, oh, and they also, the people who were doing the documentary, there was about three or four hosts. There was an Aussie. There was a Scotsman, no, an Irishman, a Brit, and a Turkish guy. And they were all telling the different sides of the story from their nationality's perspective, all together, and on location, and sort of doing tag team commentary, basically, of what was going on. Plus, they had photos of some of the guys that actually fought there from all sides, and their letters home, and their letters afterwards. And then they actually had television footage of these guys, ran, you know, circa 1985, telling their side of the story, whatever that is, 70 years later. And then they said how the very last surviving guy from Gallipoli was an Australian guy who died a couple of years ago at the age of 103. It's the last guy who had actually been there. But, it was just a massive disaster, man, I don't know what we should remember on Anzac Day. Should we remember the way that we just got screwed over? How stupid were we to go, yeah, all right. What? Turkey? Yeah, we'll go. And, they had a lot of letters of these guys on their way to war. And this was kind of the last war, I guess, where people went thinking it was going to be lots of fun and adventure. Oh, off we go to battle the Germans. Hey-ho, off we go. This will be lovely. Cup of tea, slice of cake, go fight them Germans. And, World War One, 24 million people died in World War One. Anyway.
So we should get a military expert, a military historian on the show or something.
Yeah, exactly. We got to get some people who can come and talk to us about this in a little bit more detail. There were, according to Wikipedia, 180,000 Allied casualties and 220,000 Turkish casualties. And it says this campaign has become a founding myth for both Australia and New Zealand. And they were saying this in the documentary, how it was a founding myth, and this is where, you know, we sort of discovered our true nature. I'm like, what, getting wiped out on a foreign beach that we had no right being there in the first place? Like, there was, the Turkish weren't threatening us. The Turkish hadn't bombed us. They hadn't done anything. They hadn't lifted a finger. We just decided, yeah, we don't like them Turks. We're going to go and blow you up.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because, I mean, we do in Australia, we celebrate this in some form or fashion every year. And yet, the majority of people don't probably understand what actually happened. They just think we lost a lot of people in the war.
Well, and it's sort of, I guess what bothers me is, right, the way in the public consciousness here, it is sort of seen as a heroic moment, you know. It's something where we celebrate Australians' heroism and tenacity, and these guys went and gave their lives, and the sacrifice that they paid. I mean, that's like saying somebody who commits suicide is committing some sort of noble sacrifice. I mean, it comes back to this issue of, I don't know. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of hate mail over that. If we had any listeners, we'd get a lot of hate mail over that. I mean, if we had conscription, if there was a battle, there's no fracking way I'd be going to war. There would have to be people on our fracking doorstep with a long track record of torturing men, women, and children for me to go, yeah, okay, give me a gun. I'm off to war, you know. But I guess, you know, it's 100 years later almost, and 90 years later, we're probably a little bit more educated about the right and wrong reasons to go to war, although it didn't seem to stop a bunch of people going to Iraq a couple of years ago.
Right, we just enlist the US Army, aren't they? They're our outsourced army, aren't they?
Yeah, look at the great job that they've done in Iraq. Yeah, it turned stellar job over there, boys and girls, stellar job. Anyway, so I thought we should do some stuff about Anzac Day this week. Yeah, so let's try and track down someone who can come on and talk to us about them. Google's released their API. You mentioned this on Friday, and it's actually true. They've released the API.
Yes, I'm actually Google looking Calendar. Forward to it. Now, it was at the end of the week, so I actually haven't gone looking, but it wouldn't surprise me if somebody's come up with some little dinky application that does something with it. So there'll already be stuff, especially given it was a weekend. God, all those hackers will have, you know, gone to work and built something or another.
Well, nothing that I've seen, but it's probably being built. There's a great blog called Googling Google that I like to read, and it was on Googling Google where I saw him announce the official release of the API. I think it was going to happen Friday, but it actually happened Saturday. Google Google is written by Garrett Rogers. It's a ZNet blog. And, yeah, it actually got released on Saturday, I believe. So he says, Google's solution makes use of both RSS Atom, both the syndication format and publication protocol, and a model for queries and results. I haven't used the API yet, but it looks like it will be well received by the development community. And says, if you're interested in the Google Calendar Data API, you should subscribe to this Google group, which is where he reckons some of the early applications will be announced, which is the Google Calendar Data API group, which I'm pinging through, and there doesn't seem to be any announcements or anything in there, but a lot of people sort of chatting. So yeah, that's good. So let's hope that they ramp it up a little bit. Hey, now I have noticed a problem. Remember the time zone problem I was having?
Yep.
And we had a workaround that, who told me about the workaround? Gav, my old mate from HP, Gavin Wilson, told me about the time. Now the problem with that is, I have since found, is that if you use any of the auto insert into my calendar functions in Gmail, it tries to insert it into your primary calendar, the first one that you set up, the one that has all the wrong time zone shit, and we have disenabled. Is that a word? I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. So it's actually not a good workaround solution. you actually end up with shit going all sorts of places, and yeah. If somebody invites you to a calendar, invites you to a thing, it goes into your primary calendar, not your secondary calendar, and so you have to be constantly moving shit around.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen that somebody also dug into a little bit of the code and found that there appears to be at least coming the ability to do tasks?
Tasks, yeah, same guy.
Okay. Well,
yeah, he was, this is Garrett, he was messing about and looking at their source code and seeing some stuff that has obviously been built in to handle tasks but hasn't been sort of launched yet. So that's cool, but what else?
I found this earlier today. You've got there's Google Video and there's YouTube and all those places where you can upload your image and then you send a URL to people and people can look at it, or they can put a flash player in a blog or web page or whatever. But you can't, in a lot of them, you can't actually download the video if you want to. Well, there's this new website called KeepVid. So KeepVid.com, and you can put the URL of all these different places, and it's got a list: Google, YouTube, Break.com, iFilm, Putfile, and a whole heap of other ones, and it will enable you to actually download it as a AVI, like an MPEG file, which is kind of cool.
Okay. And what are you downloading, Rich? You're going to tell us what kind of videos you've found necessary to download?
No. No, actually, I haven't. I go to these. The thing that annoys me is you go to these sites and there's usually crap. There's not very much quality video in these places that I can find. So I don't often go to them. I mean, occasionally I'll see something that's, you know, in one of the lists that's got a decent, or someone blogs about something that's an interesting video, and I go and have a look, but I don't actually go there and look at the top 10 or anything, because it's like the dig stuff, right? It's emails that your mother or whatever is going to send you because they're, you know, several years too late to the net.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've been over a couple of times and had a look at some of the most popular videos, and they're always crap. But, you know, I watched a good thing on it this morning. It's interesting that a lot of films, you know, movie production houses are starting to use YouTube and Google Video as the way of putting the trailers out there.
Yeah.
There was one I looked at this morning. There's a film, it's not by Al Gore, but it's pretty much about Al Gore, a speech.
Oh, this is the environment one, yeah?
Yeah, it's a film that's coming out called An Inconvenient Truth. It's about climate change. And I heard about it on Mitch Kapoor's blog, funnily enough, which I only discovered this morning too. Mitch Kapoor, as I'm sure most of you listening to this will know, was the guy who co-founded Lotus Development Corporation, co-founded Lotus 1-2-3, you know, probably what was the name of the first spreadsheet application? Calc, Easy Calc.
Yeah.
But it was the first really popular one that kind of popularized the PC in business, really. You know, most businesses started buying PCs when they could do spreadsheets. It was the killer app for the PC in business, way before Microsoft Excel. And then he went on and co-founded the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Creative Commons and all that kind of stuff. So he's got a new blog that's only just started, and he's writing a lot of interesting posts about the need to use the internet to change politics, and not just create a new political party, but fundamentally to change the way that we think of democracy in the Western world and how we use the internet to get people to vote, etc. He's writing a lot of innovative stuff. I mean, these are ideas that we've been talking about for a long time, but, you know, guys like Mitch Kapoor have got the track record of pulling stuff off. Anyway, so he started talking about this Al Gore film. By the way, he's also one of the guys who was involved in developing Foxmarks. He's the chair of the Mozilla Foundation as well, and was behind the Foxmarks bookmark synchronization tool that I've been using for the last couple of months, which is really good. It helps you synchronize your bookmarks between Firefox running on different PCs. Anyway, there's this.
So we're almost to the movie, right?
Yeah, it's a long journey.
Hang on, let me just get comfortable.
So this is what he says about the Al Gore film. The film, which is part science lecture by the best college professor you ever had, and part evangelistic warning about the impact of global climate change, centers around a compelling lecture and slideshow Al Gore has given over 1,000 times, which comes out of deep-rooted personal passion and conviction, and which has its origins when he was a junior senator from Tennessee in the 1970s. No one can say he's a Johnny-come-lately to the issue. At a recent TED, the talk was the highlight of the conference, and the documentary drew raves at Sundance, where it premiered. When he gave the talk a few months ago at our office in San Francisco, which houses the Open Source Application Foundation, Creative Commons, and the Level Playing Field Institute, some employees had what amounts to a religious conviction about climate change, in essence moving it off the long list of things we know are problems but aren't on the front burner to the short list of burning issues. This mirrors the situation in general. While the majority of Americans now recognize global warming is a real problem, it is not taken with a great sense of urgency. Perhaps a documentary and accompanying book, the website, and the attendant hoo-ha can help catalyze a further shift in public opinion. God knows we need it. The mainstream media is still playing the issue as a he said, she said debate instead of giving due weight to the scientific consensus, and op-ed columnists like John Tierney of the New York Times are focusing on making fun of tree huggers. Okay, hard to resist sometimes, rather than being serious about the substantive issues. The movie opens May 26th in LA, June 2nd in San Francisco. So I went and had a look at the trailer from YouTube, and it's a fantastic trailer by the looks of it. A lot of very vivid imagery showing before and after shots of places like Mount Kilimanjaro, which used to be covered in snow and then, according to this, is now completely dry. And talking about, you know, the disasters in New Orleans and places like that, the one we just had in Australia up near Ipswich. Was it Ipswich? No. Darwin? No. Where did we have that cyclone hit recently?
Cyclone. There's one going through Darwin as we speak, I think. But a few weeks back in Queensland, far north Queensland or something, wasn't it? I don't know which towns it hit.
Yeah, it wasn't our town, so we don't care. But far north. I'm just googling here. I'm fine.
I thought it was funny, and I mean, I never, being apolitical, I don't pay a particular amount of attention to politicians, although I should. So I never really saw Al Gore speak, but he looks like he's an amazing speaker. I thought it was funny how he said, "I am the next president," or whatever, which obviously is a common term and everybody knows what it is, but I found that amusing.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, and of course, Al Gore is the guy who invented the internet.
That's right.
So he is now, you know, he wasn't happy just being the guy who invented the internet. He's now going to be the guy who saves the world, which is fantastic. Good luck to him.
Yeah, and we should put him in a space shuttle and send him off to stop a meteorite hitting the world. Maybe we should do that with all of politicians.
All politicians, except Al Gore, because he's actually trying to do something.
We'll send him off with, what was it, hairdressers and telephone technicians or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't know that. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, I do remember that. I don't remember the quote, though. Atherton. That's where it was really badly hit up in Queensland. Atherton and Innisfail and up around there, major cyclone damage. So anyway, and he sort of talks about how we're seeing, you know, as a result of global warming, more and more of these cataclysmic events hitting places where they've never hit before as our weather gets all messed up. It's this film, again, it's called... Shit, what's it called? Where's my blog? An Inconvenient Truth is being, you know, promoted as the most terrifying film you'll ever see. So, yeah, there you go. But the trailer is up on YouTube now. Definitely check it out. I am definitely going to see this film. I had a meeting a couple of weeks ago with a guy from the WWF. Did I tell you about that? The World Wildlife Foundation? Is that what they're called?
You mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about doing some shows together, sort of WWF and TPN doing some stuff around, you know, climate change and sustainable energy and saving the furry wombats.
We need to do something like that because, I mean, there's so much FUD. I mean, I don't know what's true and what's not. You know, one day there's or 1 year there's everybody saying how there's global warming. The next year it's saying there's been no global warming since X many years. And then you see this movie come out that says there's global warming. And so I'd like to get somebody that can set the facts straight, you know, just tell us how it is straight down the line.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously there are countries like Australia whose economy thrives on mining the crap out of our natural resources, getting this coal, and then we need the world to keep burning all this coal up and destroying the atmosphere, you know. And so our government's going to keep denying this global warming. The US's economy is built on the back of oil. Yeah, so they're going to keep denying that there's climate change. You're right. And the media, which is obviously, you know, in bed with all of these parties, just sticks their head in the sand and doesn't talk about it. We the new media, need to do more to help build awareness. But good on Al Gore. I mean, Al Gore's also doing that TV thing. What's it called? Do you remember?
No, I didn't know he was.
Yeah, he launched 6 months ago this sort of next-generation internet-delivered TV system.
It's not the one that Meisner is involved in as well.
Don't know. It's called Current TV. And they're sort of, it's a cable network as well as stuff on the internet. But they're basically, it's sort of citizen media over cable and over the net, enabling people to produce their own, you know, TV shows and TV video blogs and that kind of stuff and putting it up there and giving them distribution. So, I mean, Al Gore, we should try and get Al Gore on the show.
Hell yeah.
I think Al's trying to do stuff. He's a guy who's trying to make shit happen, you know.
Yeah, let's get him on.
Okay. Anyone out there who can connect us with Al, let us know.
Just send him an email. Isn't it al.gore@internet.com?
Al Gore.
I thought he invented it.
He did invent it, yeah. Surely, it just would be Al.
Al at internet.com,
yeah. Because, you know, when you're the guy, like I got Cameron at the podcastnetwork.com because, you know, how many other Camerons are there going to be? When are we going to get you a TPN email address, man?
I didn't know there was some going.
We only started using it a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. The boys have been careful to we're going to roll it out on a new server and put some spam filters and virus filters and shit like that up. But
the boys probably don't want anything to do with me. They just think I'm annoying, whingy bastard.
Yeah, you are, because you keep going, oh, I used to work at Sun and, you know.
I keep asking them.
Tell me how you're tracking your servers.
I keep asking and I haven't heard any answers.
That's because we're not doing shit, mate.
Exactly. My current theory is they've got no fucking idea how well the servers are running because they don't track it. And that's my point. They can't tell me that they are not having issues if they don't monitor the fucking system.
And the Gadget Show just went off the air. mate, these guys are working part-time for me. I'm paying them to be honest. All I want is
a little honesty. Don't try and FUD me, man. That's why I keep pointing out I worked at Sun. You don't fucking pull
They're not FUDing you. They're just not answering you because they're too busy doing shit that I've got them. We got a task list about a mile long and they're working. Yeah,
fair enough. Just don't tell them not to say it must be Richard's ADSL router.
They're working 24/7. Yeah, this was an email thread we had because Rich, a couple of episodes of G'day World, didn't download properly. Hey, by the way, if anyone listening to this has had issues of G'day World or any other TPN podcasts not fully downloading via iTunes or whatever else, can you let me know? So shoot me an email, Cameron@thepodcastnetwork.com. I've started getting a handful, and it's genuinely maybe 10 or 20 reports in the last couple of weeks that people aren't getting shows fully downloading, usually via iTunes. And we know the shows are there. The shows aren't corrupted. They're up there. And if people go and download them manually, they come down fine. We're just trying to figure out, is it a problem on your end or a problem on... Is it a very widespread problem which could be coming from our end? We don't think it is, but it could be. Let us know. Speaking of TPN, we launched a new show over the weekend that I'm excited about. Have you checked out Nui's Rave yet?
No, I haven't heard about that one. Have we announced it?
Yeah. Nui's Rave, which is spelled NUISRAVE .thepodcastnetwork.com. Not the world's greatest name for a show, but anyway, we'll run with it for now. Nui Takoa is a senior writer with the Herald Sun, a newspaper, the number one newspaper in Melbourne. Actually, it's the largest selling newspaper in Australia, he tells me, the Herald Sun. And Nui's been working there as a journalist for many years, and he writes an entertainment column, among other things. And the entertainment column is he interviews musicians, all the biggest acts that tour Australia, he interviews them. So the Stones and, you know, U2 and everyone. So, and apparently what he does when he interviews them over the phone or in person usually. Either way, he records the interview and then he transcribes it later and ends up with, you know, a column of stuff. But they're 20-minute interviews that he records and then he does, you know, writes it up into, you know, a couple of paragraphs that ends up in the newspaper. And so what we're doing now is we're taking those recordings, current ones and his archived ones, and we're going to put them out as a podcast each week. So we launched the first one this week, we launched over the weekend, is an interview we did recently with 50 Cent, or 50 Cent, 50 Cent, member of, you know, the Eminem's rap label. And it's a great, it's a 20-minute long interview with 50 Cent that he did when 50 Cent was in Brisbane a couple of months ago on his tour.
Yeah, that's cool.
And coming up, this episode this week is going to be Snoop Dogg, I believe. We got Snoop Dogg coming up this week, and then we've got all sorts of stuff. He's got interviews with Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac talking about her drug problems. And that's the great thing about it. These aren't fluffy-type interviews, because Nui's a real journalist, quote-unquote. He's not one of these poofy...
Half-assed podcast guys.
Poofy. I can't believe I used the word poofy. One of these, you know, you see these people interview, you see these musicians interviewed on TV or on radio, and it's always 60 seconds long, and it's fluffy. So what do you think of our country, and have you had a chance to pat a kangaroo yet, and, you know, congratulations, Tom, on the birth of your baby. Is it, you know, are you excited being a dad? Like, you know, fuck off. So, he interviews Snoop, he interviewed 50 Cent about the shooting that happened recently that some of his members were involved in. He interviews him about being a drug dealer. Apparently, when he interviewed Snoop, he talked to him about, you know, going from being a drug dealer to getting off the drugs and now coaching little league teams and what that life change is all about. He interviewed Nikki Sixx about a drug problem. So he always talks about their drug problems and their addictions and, you know, marriage breakups. And he asked 50 Cent about his breakup with his girlfriend. And it's, you know, hard-hitting stuff. So anyway, I'm excited about that. I think that's a bit different. Not too many podcasters get an opportunity to interview these guys. And Nui's decided to come over to the side of goodness and light, as well as continuing his work for the Herald Sun, I might add. And it's produced by Big Rob Farley, who's one of Nui's mates. I'm going to get this wrong. I was going to say both Maori guys, Nui Tokoa. If I've got that wrong, Rob and Nui are going to probably break my legs. But I think they're Maori guys. Anyway, they're both very large guys. Scary-looking blokes. I had a coffee with him at my local cafe a month ago when we were setting this up, and I'd never met either of them in person. I said to Rob Farley, how am I going to know you? How am I going to recognize you? He goes, just look for two big Maori guys. All right. And so I get there, and I see this table with two big Maori guys sitting on it. And I go up and I go, are you Big Rob? And this bloke goes, no. okay, sorry. I walked away. If you live outside of Australia and New Zealand, Maori guys tend to be about 7 feet tall. If you've ever seen the All Blacks play, that's what they look like. They all look like that.
So meanwhile, two skinny Aussie guys were sitting on another table laughing at you.
Pissing themselves laughing, yeah. No, they were big Maori guys. So there you go. Got anything else for me, mate?
No, the vid thing was about... There's one other thing. That's, I'll just flick you this URL because I saw it and I've got to have a proper read of the article. It basically, there's a photograph. I haven't got an IM open to you. I have to... Where are you?
You can't. I've put you on... I did. I opened one up. I've got one open so you can get through.
Can I?
Yeah.
I still don't have it open. So does that mean I can still send it?
What? IM me, bitch. What are you doing?
You get it?
Yep.
So it's an internal scan of two women, one 250-pound and one 120-pound. It's amazing the difference. And the larger lady, her legs are kind of bowed and Actually, there's no real description. It doesn't really. I'd like somebody to explain to me, you know, the impacts and actually show it in the diagram. But you can, yeah, I mean, obviously there's...
Okay, let me just explain what Rich means by an internal scan. Because I thought you were sticking a camera up someone's clacker there. Did you? It's not. It's like a full body X-ray that shows bones and brain and organs and everything, full body, with them both standing upright. Yeah, that is. That's amazing. You can see the amount of body fat on each woman, and you can see all the organs enlarged, how the bones are sort of not sort of bowed, as you said. Man.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It should go up on an advert somewhere for obesity or something, and it makes me wish I hadn't eaten all that chocolate at Easter.
Yeah, well, I was just getting myself ramped up to my exercise regime again, and now I've gone and broken my toe, so there goes my exercise for the next 6 weeks.
Except a hop or something, and one side of your body will be lean and mean. But I thought ninjas like yourself, mate, don't need toes to train. I've still got that visual image of you jumping up, fucking waist down, butt naked, doing a ninja stance.
Would you like me to recreate the moment on video for you so you can see exactly what was going on?
Yeah, and upload it to YouTube.
I will. Okay, I'll do one of those dramatic recreations. I'll have to get someone to play me, though, so I won't be playing myself.
Well, yeah, because you've got a broken toe.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I think that's pretty much it. I think we've wasted people's enough time. Oh, we do have some audio messages. One audio message, at least, that I played the other day. This is from... Do you remember on Friday I was talking about the delicate genius and his recording of Cory Doctorow's talk?
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't remember Michael's real name. All I could remember was delicate genius. Oh, no, Odeo's timing out on me. Don't do that. See, it's just going to mess with me again. Odeo's been up and down in the last 24 hours. Not exactly handling their load or something.
Bloody dodgy Web 2.0 applications.
Yeah. Well, Michael Corhani, as he is called, left me an audio message about my inability to remember and pronounce his surname. So I'll insert that in here for your amusement.
G'day, Cameron. It's Michael Corhani, also known as Delicate Genius. Let me say that again, actually. Michael Corhani. That's Corhani. No L's, no R's, no funky pronunciations. But anyway, thanks for the mention on G'day World and for the mention on the blog. Did I tell you how much it bothers me that people can't fucking pronounce my surname? God damn it. It hurts me. It hurts my family. It hurts my children. It might hurt you one day. Probably not, but it might. Anyway, thanks for the mention on both of them. I got a total of 3 referrers from your blog post, which probably means I owe you a percentage of the AdSense I get from my blog every so often. And I think you probably, look, if you play your cards right, you've got yourself half a cent coming your way. So that, I promise you, half a cent coming your way. So maybe next time you're in Sydney and next time I could give a fuck, we'll probably, I'll give you your half a cent. But thanks anyway, that's just a quick note for that. And no doubt I'll see you on your blog commenting with the rest of the freaking retards that you have there. They're not all retards, but I think you know who the retards are. I'll refrain. Anyway, thanks a lot, man. I'll catch you later. Bye.
Because it was pretty funny. Sorry about that, DG. But, get a real fucking surname that we can pronounce, mate. Go change it by Depol or something. I think I called him Michael Smith. Corleone. Michael Corleone or something.
Yeah.
I call everyone Michael Corleone. Thanks again, Michael. And send us some messages, people. I mean, I got an email today from someone, too. We got a comment in the comments section of G'day World. Did you see that?
Yeah.
You want to read it out so I don't have to bring it up?
So this is the one from Chris Newman.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris.
Shout out.
He's saying, just a quick note to say how much I enjoy your podcast. And therefore I thought he hadn't been a long-term listener. Have been listening for about a year now and enjoy the no-bullshit approach you guys take to issues, big or small. Wonder what some of your US brethren make of the G'day world.
I always thought it was an all-bullshit approach that we took.
Well, there's definitely bullshit in it.
Yeah.
However, here are two suggestions for you. Cam asks for ideas for future shows. Not sure if you'd consider discussing the legalities involved in operating internet forums, communities, etc. I'm contemplating operating an community, okay, based website about Canberra heritage. I would be relying on locals to write their own content with a small and trusted group of publishers to oversee quality of content. Looking at OS products like Mumbo and Plone. However, my question is, what risks would I open myself up to legally if someone posted content that may be breach of CR or someone, rightly or wrongly, takes offence?
CR is Cameron Riley, breach of Cameron Riley.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Copyright, I'm assuming you mean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Country Road,
yeah. Not sure if you consider this too dry a content for the G'day shoe.
Well, let's answer that one. You know anything about... Now,
give it a go, and if the lawyers come asking, you know that you're probably going down the wrong road.
Speaking of lawyers, yeah. Do you want to talk about your recent cease and desist letter?
I will, yeah, after this suggestion too. Mentioned he recently bought a Direct Connect storage device. He didn't mention if it was RAID or not. I pose the question because I'm just about to buy a NAS. As someone said to me recently, you don't really know how valuable your data is until you lose it. Anyhow, Cam, I'm sure you've got it under control and back up your stuff regularly. Cheers again.
Well, let's answer the second one first. To me, NAS is a wrapper and RAID is fly spray. That's about how much I know. No, it's just a hard drive, man.
Yeah, it was just a... Was it 200 gig or something, was it?
Yeah, 200 gig... IDE hard drive that I'm plugging in. But I did see some good software that our mate Marty was talking about on his blog. It's some... what's it called? Let me see. I downloaded it here. Some good backup software that'll automatically back up sets of data behind the scenes to a backup hard drive. SyncBack, which I just downloaded this morning. I'm going to install it on my desktop to back stuff up, which should be cool. As for the first one with the legalities, you always hear about issues with running forums, that kind of stuff. What I recommend you do, mate, is rather than us talk about it on G'day World, you should pop over to communityadmin.thepodcastnetwork.com.
Yeah, good
and
idea.
Have a chat to my mate Patrick, who's the host of that show. Pat's a young bloke who runs a whole bunch of online communities, online forums. Go over and ping him a question and get him to do a show on it if he hasn't already. Probably has. So better than me answering it because I got no idea. I just pay a lot of money to lawyers to get me out of trouble. So yeah, you want to tell people about your recent cease and desist as a case in point for how much you know about
law? Should people ask me advice about legal stuff? Absolutely not. So just over a week ago or something like that, I got a little envelope in the mail sort of saying I had to pick something up from the post office, which I got excited about because it, you know, hopefully it was going to be a t-shirt or something interesting in a big package. But I guess the warning bells should have gone off when they asked me to sign for a little envelope, which I did on a little pink piece of paper. And anyway, opened it up, and it was a letter from a lawyer in... Where are they? Let's have a look. Livingston... Roseland, New Jersey. And so some listeners may know, some might not, but I set up my own consultancy and... got a business name here in WA called Click Communications and set up a website with a blog and, you know, did all that good sort of web presence stuff. Anyway, the interesting thing is that somebody else has got a company called Click Communications based somewhere or another in the US, and I think they do sort of like instant message type technology. So I wasn't too particularly concerned because, you know, different business type stuff, right? I'm doing, helping people, consulting to people to do with the internet, and they were producing software that helps people do instant messaging. And they've got a website. So my website was clickcom.com, which is clickcom.com. And theirs just happen to have one less M, which, you know, they didn't particularly have a problem with, which I found interesting. What they had a problem with was, though, my logo, which they claim is... now, where did they put it? Let's read it out, because it has come to our attention that you operate an internet website at, and I've just given you the URL, and use a confusingly similar C within a letter C logo on that website in connection with your internet and technology-related consultation services. Anyway, so yeah, they've asked me to stop using the logo that I've got, and I've got to, if you will provide your written assurance by April 30, 2006, that you will immediately discontinue any further use of any logo confusingly similar to Click's CC logo, we believe this matter can be settled amicably. In the interim, we reserve all of our clients' rights in law and equity, blah, 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 blah. I mean, and overall, I've got to admit, my neighbour had a look at the letter and he sort of said, oh, you know, they're pretty polite about it, which I've got to agree. They didn't just send me a letter saying, take it down, you bastard. So that's the letter that I got.
Now, what interests me about that is that you went and set up this business without checking that there was another company somewhere in the world with the exact same name as yours.
Well, you did check
and went, oh, I don't care.
No, but see, having done a little bit of study of law, I know that it's okay to have a name that is similar or the same as long as you're not doing the same type of business, in which this case we're not. It's a completely different type of business. And that's probably why they haven't asked me to change the name.
But just the fact that another business existed with the same name, wouldn't you go, okay, I'll come up with something else?
You're just pedantic, though.
No, come on, man. When you go...
No. Well, I didn't, right? That's obvious. I didn't.
It even pisses me off that, you know, Podshow decided to call themselves the Podshow Podcast Network, and every other people out there now calling themselves the X Podcast Network. I'm like, well, come on. I'm already there. I'm already called the Podcast Network. Come up with something else, guys. I mean...
Yeah, but they're in the same type of business that you are.
But it doesn't matter, man.
So you can be pissed off about it because they're in the same type of business you're in. And you might have legal grounds for it if you've got a trademark on the Podcast Network. However... these guys don't do anything the same as me. They develop software for instant message services. So, therefore, they can't really claim name.
I'm not talking about their legal grounds. I'm talking about why didn't you just come up with something that was different? It's just confusing.
Because it's not that easy these days, right?
Hang on.
You've got to come up with something that's original. Plus, you can get the domain name. Plus, that has some meaning. You know, there's a whole bunch of marketing that goes into it, not just pulling a name out of your ass.
Yeah, it's really that hard, man.
You were lucky that you got the name and the domain name before podcasting really, you know, became popular, right?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. The other way is I was just, you know, it wasn't actually me that registered, actually. It was my business partner at the time. But, you know, we came up with the name, but it was available. But, you know, it was there was a million things that we were looking at the time, you know. You know, if I was setting up a new business today and I Googled the name, I won't even set up podcasts.
Pedantic, right? That's
what I'm
saying.
Well, I'm not. It's just a case of branding, man. You don't want to have other two businesses out there with the same name. It's confusing.
Why? What if I'm the number one Click Communications?
Oh, for God's sakes. Is this a WA thing?
No, it's just...
It's a country.
Mean, you're,
it's like,
you're telling me... I'm
well,
stupid.
Hey, Martha, I don't
telling
get
me
the
I'm
problem.
Stupid
you
setting
are,
up a
you
company.
Are stupid.
Because there was another company in the world that had the name. It's the same as, you know, the Apple case that's going on at the moment, which has got other interesting implications. Because they're in the same business now, but Apple called themselves Apple, and so did a company in the UK that was doing music. I mean, who cares? They're doing two separate types of business, so there's no real confusion. But now they're claiming there is confusion because now they're both in the music business.
It's not just some company in the UK, mate. It was the Beatles.
So? The Beatles do music. They're not good at building a business, right? I mean, who cares? I mean, how many Apple records have you bought recently?
Beatles? I downloaded all the Beatles.
Okay.
Hey,
and
speaking.
Do you get really confused when you look at the iTunes music store and go, "Oh, wasn't that the Beatles that set that up?"
I want the audience to vote on this. I'm going to set up a vote. Is Richard an idiot or not? Tell us what you think. Just on that, and then we'll get off.
And add a little bit at the bottom saying something about procrastination.
Just to get off of that, and we'll wrap the show up. The other thing that pissed me off over the last couple of days was the family of Juan Miró, the dead Spanish artist, issuing Google with a cease and desist for trying to celebrate Miró's art by incorporating elements of it into the Google logo last week.
Terrible, terrible.
Morons. What complete and utter fracking morons do these people have to be? Miró died 30 years ago. Great 20th century European artist. But, let's face it, he's probably not on the tip of everybody's lips, particularly, the younger generation. Here's a great opportunity for Google, one of the most popular websites in the world, one of the most popular net destinations in the world, to revive interest in Miró. They could have used, the Miró estate could have used it as an opportunity to really, enhance the memory of him. What do they do? No, they complain about it. Idiots. Idiots. And particularly after sitting through Cory Doctorow's thing last week, it just reminds me, it just reinforces how stupid people are for being that pedantic about enforcing their copyrights. I mean, yes, I understand it could set a precedent. They could go, well, and somebody else could copy it next week, and we could go, well, and they could go, well, you didn't do anything to Google when Google used it, now we can use it. And I mean, it doesn't matter, people. For Christ's sakes. And then somebody came onto the G'day World comments and said, well, how would you feel if some major TV station or radio station started taking your shows and, replaying them to millions of their listeners? I'd be like, are you kidding me? It'd be fantastic. It'd be the cheapest advertising ever. And if you can set it up, make it happen. Like, damn. Anyway, that's enough.
That's enough talk about legal stuff. So, the answer to the question... Chris, is don't ask us about legal stuff because we'll just ramble on about it for an extra 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm out of here. Thank you, Rich. Have a good day. Good
you
couple
too,
of days. And maybe talk to you on Wednesday, depending on what happens. Have a good Anzac Day, Rich.
I will. I'm painting, I think. So.
What are you going to paint? A nice a nude landscape?
No, I got halfway through painting a nude of my wife several years ago and then never actually finished it. So now I'm painting the hall because I haven't finished painting the nude.
Okay. there's so many lines that I won't touch them because I don't know your wife. I don't want to offend her, at least until I've met her. After I've met her, then I'm happy to offend her.
Yeah, fair enough.
See you, mate.
See ya.
Much more difficult to do. Cause I could hope and pray, but never find another you.
From the producers of the Tartan Podcast and the Old Firm Podcast comes a new podcast for your Monday mornings. The podcast network is proud to present The Mellow Monday Show. Music with the vibe and the atmosphere and the mood that you need on a Monday morning. The Mellow Monday Show, only on the Podcast Network. Visit mellowmonday.thepodcastnetwork.com.